You can hear, oh, there you can hear me. Good morning. All right, when I was in middle and high school, I went to a camp called Summer's Best 2 Weeks. And it was amazing. Later I worked there in college. It's where I met Jesus and began a relationship with him. It was awesome. But at camp, we were split into two teams, and it was intense. As you can see, the Romans and the Galatians. I'm a Roman. This is how it goes. If my children go there, they are Romans. If my grandchildren go, it is like legacy since 1966. So everything's intense. So everything's competition, sports, cabin chores, even brushing your teeth, you get points for. Another way to earn points was Bible memorization. And one of the early verses I learned there was about the fruit of the Spirit. And it says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. And that was one of the early Bible memorization verses, and it just always stuck with me because it's such a beautiful list. And my sweet middle school brain, so I was like a pretty new Christian, and I was like, okay, I know what I can do. I'm going to work through them one by one. So I'm going to love, and I'm going to perfect love and like be really good at love, and then joy, and then I'll just keep going. I literally thought I could do this. As you know, probably it didn't work out that way. You can't just master love and expect it to stay that way. But today in Kids Church, we were planning lessons a while ago, and they're starting a series on the fruit of the Spirit, and they're doing love today. And so I was like, perfect. We're going to have the same series start right now. Because this verse has stuck with me for decades. And I like, if you look at all of those things, there's such beautiful characteristics and qualities. But what does it mean to try to grow in all those? So the good news that I would have helped me to know is that noticing that they're called the fruit of the Spirit. So it's not like, try really hard to perfect all of them, and then when you fail, be stressed out and give up. It's grow in our connection with God. Grow to be more like Jesus, and those characteristics will flow through us from the Spirit. So not checking off a list. So I'm not going to grow more in love just by trying. I'm going to become more loving by being more like Jesus. So the first fruit of the Spirit is love. And that's on purpose. Love's the foundation for all of the other ones. Agape love. There's in the Greek of the New Testament, we've talked about there's four different words for love, but today it'll be agape because that's what they're talking about in the fruit of the Spirit. It's the foundation for all the others. Agape love is selfless, it's sacrificial, it's unconditional. It's not about feelings or what's like we love someone because of what they can give for us. It's acting for someone else's good no matter what. So agape sees value in someone because they exist. And here's what we know. God has shown us this. God loves us first, unconditionally, selflessly, sacrificially. Romans 5:8 talks about this. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So he showed us agape love. The second part we know is that we're called to love others in the same way. Jesus said in John 13:34, a new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. So agape love's the foundation of all those fruits of the Spirit. And it echoes the greatest commandment to love God and to love others. So one of the clearest pictures of this kind of love in the Bible to me is the story of Naomi and Ruth in the book of Ruth in the Old Testament. So I'm going to kind of just tell the story. It would be so much if I read through all the verses, so I'm just going to tell it to you, but we'll have some of the verses up on the screen. So the first chapter of Ruth is like one heartbreak after another. There's a famine in Israel. So Naomi and her husband and their two sons go to, like they leave Bethlehem and they go to Moab. But soon after they get there, Naomi's husband dies. which is devastating in a time where women couldn't care for themselves. They depended on men for protection, for provision, and for legal status, for everything. Thankfully, she still has her sons with her, and they both meet and marry Moabite women named Orpah and Ruth. But then after 10 years, they die too. There's no details in the Bible. I would like to understand how this has happened, her husband and her two sons. So now it's just Naomi, Ruth, and her two daughter-in-laws. There's three widows. They have no income, no security. They really have no clear future. So Naomi decides she's going to return to Bethlehem because maybe there's hope for her there. Maybe she can survive. And she urges both of her daughter-in-laws to go back home to their families. Like, you're young, go back home to your families, you can start over. And Orpah eventually agrees, but Ruth clings to her. Even after Naomi pleads again for her to go back to her family, Ruth refuses to leave. And Ruth replies with this beautiful statement. She says, "Do not urge me to leave you or turn from following you." She says, "Where you go, I will go. Where you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God." It's really powerful and unexpected act of love when she could have been safer and just gone back to her family. But Ruth chooses to stay no matter the cost. So Ruth and Naomi go together, they return to Bethlehem, but they still face obviously a huge problem. They have no income, they have no food. So Ruth says to Naomi, "Let me go into the fields and gather leftover grain," which is a practice called gleaning, if you've ever heard of it. Gleaning was God's provision for the poor. So harvesters would purposefully leave behind some grain when they were harvesting the fields for others to collect. And it was kind of their provision for the poor and what God commanded them. It was hard work, it was risky work, especially if you think of a young foreign widow by herself. But she goes anyway. So she ends up in the field owned by a man named Boaz. He comes to check on the harvest, and he notices her, and he asks who she is. And he learns that she's the one who left her homeland to care for Naomi. And he's really moved by her loyalty and her kindness. And so he tells her she's welcome to keep gleaning in his fields. But he doesn't just say, like, "Yeah, stay and keep gleaning for my fields." He protects her. He instructs his workers to leave her alone, make sure they leave extra grain for her, and even invites her to share their food and water. That's not typical of what you would do. So she's overwhelmed by his kindness, and she says, "Why are you being so generous to me? I'm a foreigner." And Boaz replies, "Because I've heard your story, how you cared for your mother-in-law after your husband died, and how you left everything to be with her." And then he blesses her. He says, "May the Lord repay you and give you a rich reward, the God of Israel, under whose wings you've taken refuge." So this God that wasn't even her God, but she took and it became her God. So it's obviously like this moment full of grace. Ruth had no idea when she made this quiet choice to love Naomi and go with her that there would be provision. So later that day, Ruth comes home and Naomi asks, you know, she has this bundle of grain, and Naomi asks, like, "Where'd you glean today? Who showed you such kindness?" And Ruth said, "Oh, the man's name is Boaz." And Naomi's like, "Boaz? He's one of our close relatives, one of our kinsmen redeemers." And what that means is he had the legal right to help restore their family's future by marrying Ruth. There were so many customs and rules and things in that time. So Ruth says, "Well, Boaz has invited me to stay with his workers throughout the harvest." And Naomi says, she sees this as a turning point and says, "Absolutely. Good, stay in his field. You'll be safe there." So Ruth does. She continues gleaning in Boaz's fields throughout the rest of the barley and wheat harvest. Now, we're not going to go into as much detail on the rest of the book of Ruth today, but I want you to see where the story goes just to have the overview. So Naomi encourages Ruth to approach Boaz and let him know she's interested in marriage. Very bold. And so Ruth does this. She follows Naomi's advice humbly and bravely, and Boaz responds with kindness. He actually steps in as the kinsman redeemer, someone who could legally marry her and provide for her and Naomi. He goes out of his way to do it right with honor. So he marries her, they have a baby, and not only that, but their baby becomes the grandfather of King David, so it's in the lineage of Jesus. So she becomes part of this lineage of Jesus. That's amazing. So it's just agape love in action through this whole story, not just like Ruth's loyalty and Naomi's care and Boaz's redemptive love. And just wanted to take a little closer look at that. So first we have Ruth's choice. It's a love that stays. So we've walked through this heartbreaking chapter, right? Like Naomi loses everything. She tells Ruth and Orpah to go home, to start again, but Ruth doesn't leave. She makes that now famous promise that we've heard. Where you go, I will go. Your people will be my people, your God will be my God. It's not just like a beautiful saying, it's a really powerful act of sacrifice. Ruth walked away from everything familiar, her family, her culture, her religion. And it's a huge risk being a foreign widow in a land that might not welcome her. And she does it all with no guarantee of provision or blessing. She just goes out and does it. So agape love stays, even when it would be easier to walk away, even when it's hard. It says, you're not alone and I'm not going anywhere. But Ruth didn't just say the words, she lived them out. So it's her decision, but then her actions. So they return to Bethlehem, they need to eat. And that's where we see the next expression of agape love, Ruth's actions. She heads to the fields to glean the leftover grain. What poor women were allowed to do. It's exhausting, it's hot, like backbreaking, horrible work, risky, but she shows up anyway because Naomi needs her. She follows through on her promise, so that's her first action. Then she chooses daily discomfort. She didn't just say, I love you, Naomi, but she worked, sweated, and sacrificed to act on it. And she works hard and quietly with no recognition. So that's the next thing, agape love serves. It shows up. It doesn't draw attention to itself. It just keeps loving consistently, sacrificially, and faithfully. And Ruth's consistent, selfless love begins to awaken something in Naomi. So it starts to move. And Naomi becomes the love that guides. At first, she's too heartbroken to see clearly, but Ruth's steady love and service begins to soften her bitterness. And little by little, she gets some hope. And so Naomi's received love, and now she begins to give it back. She steps into a guiding role. When she hears about Boaz, this distant relative that can help, she starts to have a plan. So she sees a possible future for Ruth with Boaz and points her toward it. She offers her wisdom and walks her through what to do next. I mean, she really boldly strategizes a plan for how Ruth can make her intentions known to Boaz. I'd encourage you to read the second half of Ruth because it's quite a story of how this all comes about. So agape love, in that case, wants the best for others. It doesn't hold back. It mentors and guides and gently then supports. So this sacrificial, beautiful partnership between Ruth and Naomi now starts to pull in Boaz to the story. So Boaz sees more than Ruth's loyalty, right? He notices her in the field, and he sees her character, her sacrifice, her steady faithfulness, her work. And so he steps in. Not, he doesn't just help, but he's going to help redeem this whole situation. So when he becomes her kinsman redeemer and he marries her, she's loved and restored, but also Naomi's future is restored too. So as I said, they had a son who becomes the grandfather of David in the lineage of Jesus, which means Ruth, so this poor widowed foreigner, becomes part of Jesus' family line. It's a pretty wild part of the story, a pretty amazing way God redeems this story. So agape love redeems. It heals. It restores what is broken. And sometimes it creates a legacy. So God uses agape love to bring healing and redemption. And when we live it out, we can also become part of God's bigger story. So I want to share one of the clearest real-life examples I've ever seen of agape love in action. I want to share a story about two friends of mine, Dan and Janice. So Janice and I met, and Mark and Janice met, in about 2000 when we were serving in the youth ministry at our church in Chicago. So there's just lots of Janice. On the bottom right is Mark and I when we were going away to move here. She held our party, and that's who stayed till the end. And just other pictures of us together. She was a very vibrant person. So in 2008, I went back to Chicago for like a super tragic funeral of one of my old youth group kids. And when I came back from the service, Janice asked, like, how was I doing? And she listened the way she does, which is like intensely, and she's really listening and present with you. And it really ministered to my soul. And then I asked how she was doing, and her face lit up. Well, she said, there's this guy. And I was like, what? Okay. She told me she'd met someone named Dan through eHarmony, and they were planning to get married. I mean, I hadn't seen her in a couple months, but wow. So this story, it starts with Eros love. Here's her and Dan. Romantic, but you'll see it very much changes to a story of agape love. So Janice met Dan in person for the first time on January 13th, 2008, the month before I saw her. The very next day, she wrote this prayer on her blog. She said, God, I don't remember asking for this ever, but if our lives can be a blessing to the world because we're together, if together we grow closer to you, and if we glorify you in our conversations, dreams, and hopes, then God, I ask, bless this relationship. Bless it to the point of no return. Like the first night they met, that was her prayer. And I can confidently say God did exactly that. So that summer, she was counseling at a camp in Thailand, but she started feeling like a painful numbness in her legs. And by the time she got home a couple weeks later, she was in a wheelchair. And quickly, doctors found a tumor on her spine and removed it. But then there were follow-up tests, and it showed it was metastatic melanoma. And there was a lesion on her brain, so things were really serious. So my husband and I met Dan about a month later, early September, when we visited Chicago. And we just got a few hours with him, but his kind, compassionate heart was really striking and noticeable. And at the time, we were still hopeful Janice might recover. Here comes my crying part. But it was days later, only days later, it became clear Janice was dying. Doctors gave her only 3 to 12 months to live, this vibrant woman. And so I was heartbroken for Janice, for the unfairness of it all, but especially for Dan. He had met this amazing woman, fallen in love, was planning a future, and just 7 months later, he's facing losing her. And she actually died just 10 weeks later, on November 20th. God, I was devastated. She wouldn't make it to her 40th birthday. And we wouldn't get to go back to Chicago for this wedding. So Mark and I flew out for the services. At the funeral home, I'm standing in the lobby and I'm just looking at a photo of Janice. My friend Eve puts her hand on my arm and she says, like softly but urgently, Jackie. And I'm like, what? And I look up and I'm face to face with Dan. I was not ready for that. I hadn't expected to see him so soon. But those next few moments are etched in my memory forever. So after we hugged, I said, I don't know how you did it. And he was like, what? Did what? I said, how you stuck it out. These last few months, how hard it must have been. You met this amazing woman, and then to have all this happen. I just don't know how you did it. And he looked at me, sincere and honest, and he said, that's what love does. I was like, what? That's what love does. What an example of agape love. No one would have blamed Dan for walking away months earlier if he had said, no, this is not what I signed up for.
But he stayed. He stayed like Ruth did for Naomi. Last night, I was rereading one of her blog posts, and it was titled, Love Does That. And there it was, that same phrase Dan had said, and this is just a part of what she wrote. She said, love takes you to the ER. Love changes evening plans to meet you there. Love takes time off of work after your surgery. Love sits by your side when you have nothing to give. Love calls just to leave a message. Love braids your hair. Love prays and prays with you. Love comes back to the hospital in the middle of the night so you don't have to endure the pain alone. Love eats hospital food. Love treats you to Wendy's. Love reads to you and sings for you. Love picks up your mail and brings you your favorite picture. Love gives you thoughtful gifts, brings blueberries, cooks for you. I love this. This is so Janice. Love takes care of you like a baby, but treats you like a lady. Love plays racco with you in the bathroom. Love does all that and more. That's the end of her post. So I just don't think I'll ever forget that moment when Dan said, that's what love does. And I want to live in love that way. It's a high bar, agape love, but to bear the fruit of agape love in my life. So agape love isn't always dramatic, right? This is a dramatic story, but even in this story, it's the small little acts of love over and over sacrificial that's the agape love part. So sometimes it's the small, steady acts that just quietly reflect the heart of God. So I hope for us, we can do this together. Live and love in a way that others might say of us. That's what love does. They do what love does. So Ruth didn't know how her story would unfold, but she chose to love anyway. So did Dan, and so can we. We might not see the impact right away, but your quiet, faithful love might be part of something much bigger God is doing. God honors Ruth's love, becoming part of a redemption story that leads ultimately to Jesus. So what if the way you're loving, faithfully, quietly, sacrificially, is part of a bigger story God's writing? And consider, where in your life can you love like that? Who in your life needs that love? It could be family, friends, even coworkers, classmates, neighbors, or even strangers. Everyone needs love, agape love. The small things you do in love might be a part of something sacred. So I'm going to have Brian come up here as we prepare to gather at the Eucharist table together. And as we come to the Eucharist table today, let it be a table of agape love. See it as that, know it as that, unconditional, selfless, and life-giving love that God has for you. We give thanks that God knows us fully and loves us deeply, just as we are, unconditionally. This is the love that calls us to come, not because we're perfect, but because we're deeply, deeply loved. And at the journey, everyone is invited to take the Eucharist, to come to the table of agape love. If it's your first time here or you've been here for years or decades, you're welcome. So there's tables in the front on either side of the room. And you can take the bread, dip it into the wine or the juice. And as you receive it, ask Christ to fill you with that same agape love so you can carry that hope and healing into the world with you. So the tables are ready whenever you are. And if you'll just join me in prayer. God, thank you for showing us what real love looks like. From your love for us, from learning from Ruth, Naomi, and Boaz, we want to be people who stay. We want to be people who serve, who love without expecting anything back. God, grow in us that kind of love, selfless, steady, full of grace. God, help each of us in this room to just listen to you and hear and have our hearts and our minds open to where you might be calling us and prodding us and encouraging us to love with agape love, whether it's someone we're around every day or someone we run into here or there. Just help us remember and realize how important our small acts of love and commitment and sacrifice might be in your redemption story. Help us love others the way you do. We love you. Amen.